Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 27, Understanding Material Nature. Text number 1. Sri Bhagavan Nuvacha Prakritisto Vipurusha Najyate Prakritai Ganai Vikarad akatritvan Nigunat vajjalakavat Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Prakritistopi Purusho Najyate Prakritegana Vikarad akatritvan Nigunat vajjalakavat Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Prakritistopi Purusha Najyate Prakritegnai Vikarad akatritvan Nigunat vajjalakavat Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The personality of Godhead said, Prakritista, residing in the material body, Api, although Purusha, the living entity, na, not Ajite, is affected, Prakritai, of material nature, Gunai, by the modes, Avikarat, from being without change. Akatritvat, by freedom from proprietorship. Nigunatvat, from being unaffected by the qualities of material nature. Jala, on water. Arkavat, like the sun. Translation. The personality of Godhead, Kapila, continued. When the living entity is thus unaffected by the modes of material nature, because he is unchanging and does not claim proprietorship, he remains apart from the reactions of the modes, although abiding in a material body. Just as the sun remains aloof from its reflection on water. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the previous chapter, Lord Kapiladeva has concluded that simply by beginning the discharge of devotional service, one can attain detachment and transcendental knowledge for understanding the science of God. Here, the same principle is confirmed. A person who is detached from the modes of material nature remains just like the sun reflected on water. When the sun is reflected on water, the movement of the water or the coolness or unsteadiness of the water cannot affect the sun. Similarly, Vasudevhi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.7. When one engages fully in the activities of devotional service, Bhakti Yoga, he becomes just like the sun reflected on water. Although a devotee appears to be in the material world, actually he is in the transcendental world. As the reflection of the sun appears to be on the water, but is many millions of miles away from the water. So one engaged in the Bhakti Yoga process is Niguna, or unaffected by the qualities of material nature. Avikara means without change. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that each and every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and thus his eternal position is to cooperate or to dovetail his energy with the Supreme Lord. That is his unchanging position. As soon as he employs his energy and activities for sense gratification, this change of position is called vikara. Similarly, even in this material body, when he practices devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, he comes to the position which is without change because that is his natural duty. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, liberation means reinstatement in one's original position. The original position is one of rendering service to the Lord, bhakti yogin bhaktya. When one becomes detached from material attraction and engages fully in devotional service, that is changelessness. Akartritvat means not doing anything for sense gratification. When one does something at his own risk, there is a sense of proprietorship and therefore a reaction. But when one does everything for Krishna, there is no proprietorship over the activities. By changelessness and by not claiming the proprietorship of activities, one can immediately situate himself in the transcendental position, in which one is not touched by the modes of material nature, just as the reflection of the sun is unaffected by the water. So here the Lord Kapila, of course, Lord Kapila is one of the various forms, eternal forms of Krishna. There are many different expansions of the One Supreme Lord, Lord Sri Krishna. Just like when we, you know, when devotees worship the Shalagram Shila, there may be Kapila Shila, Korma Shila, Varaha Shila, but a devotee generally sees these all Krishna. They're worshipping Krishna in the Shalagram. Although they acknowledge that the mood that Krishna is in that particular form. They're not impersonal. So just like someone, maybe someone's father or mother, maybe a high court judge. So when that father or mother is home, there's a particular mood. And when that father or mother is in the courtroom, then one accepts that different mood. One doesn't take liberties. So although it is Krishna, we still acknowledge the mood he is in his form as Kapila. But we understand still he is Krishna. So sometimes I've noticed that some devotees, when they worship a Shalagram, because they've heard the instruction generally, that and Shalagrams generally we worship Krishna, so therefore sometimes they put a flute. they may have an Ashringa Shalagram and they put a flute there, but that's not proper. For Nishringa Shaila, you put the sword and the spear and, you know, different weapons for killing demons, not the flute. And it's for the Krishna Shaila. There is a Krishna Shaila. Krishna Shaila has different markings, sometimes the mark of a cow's hoofprint or different things like that. And then you can put the flute and things like that. So here, Lord Kapila is giving this instruction how, as described here previously, we've heard in previous chapters, that Lord Kapila has concluded simply by beginning the discharge of devotional service, one can attain detachment and transcendental knowledge for understanding the science of God. So this is a very big statement, because in this world there's very few people who will accept that principle. Even amongst those who are trying to become God conscious and trying to become detached from the material world, there's very few people who will accept that principle that Lord Kapila is saying, that if you just even begin the process of devotional service to Krishna, then you will, it says here, you can attain detachment and transcendental knowledge for understanding the science of God. So, very few people accept it, and yet we see within the Hare Krishna movement, established by Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, and coming down the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when people eat prasadam or come and visit the temple or chant Hare Krishna, they do develop a detachment. They start giving up meat and intoxication and, you know, so many different things, gambling, and, you know, live a more wholesome life. They get a very good understanding of spiritual life beyond what you will find even in many of the top levels of other religious organizations. So for instance, in India, where most people have, even if they haven't really looked at the Bhagavad Gita, it's sort of ingrained now within the culture to some degree. Most people accept the sattvic understanding that there is a spirit soul within each and every living entity. So within the dog, within the cow, within the human, like that. That's a very elevated, that's a sattvic, that's an elevated understanding of the basis of spiritual life. Whereas you see in Christianity and other different religions, not criticizing, but the fact is that in general, they don't accept that animals have souls. Okay? So that is more that therefore, they're looking more according to the bodily understanding, and that is more rajasic. Some have souls, some don't. And some religious organizations don't even accept that even all humans have souls. Or in some religious organizations, including Christianity, they accept that you don't have a soul until a certain point. So, the basic understanding of even the average person in India is actually quite elevated, really. there is a sense of God consciousness. Prabhupada used to say in India, in the Indian culture, you just scratch a little bit below the surface and you'll find there's God consciousness there. In other cultures, sometimes you have to dig a little deeper. So, and we see that, you know, people who come to Krishna consciousness, no matter what level they have come from, they very quickly, even sometimes within, you know, days, you know, to be honest, I became a vegetarian the day I joined the Hare Krishna movement, because that day, I properly understood in the association of devotees that, you know, animals have souls, you know, and it was firmly, you know, and in the association of devotees, of course, you know, that understanding pervades everything. Every meal time, we have brishadam. There's no animal products. So it really, you know, from morning to night, it's really, you know, it is a way of life to live and breathe that consciousness that every living entity is a spirit soul. We should, therefore, as a spirit soul in a material body, as Krishna says to Arjuna, that they experience the same bodily difficulties as we do. We're a spirit soul in a material body. We experience all sorts of problems in the material body, and they also experience those different problems in the material body. So, you know, that understanding that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has different energies, the material energy, the spiritual energy, and the marginal energy, which is the spirit soul. That understanding, people learn even within a few days, and they can accept it quite easily within a short period of understanding associating with devotees. And yet that understanding is very, very, as I said, even the basic understanding of a soul within each living entity is very, very rare. But that higher elevation of God consciousness and our eternal relation, that's you know, becomes common to most people who associate with devotees, you know, within a short period of time. So, although it's a big statement, in our practical life, we see the people who associate with Srimad Bhagavatam through the ISKCON movement and associate with the Bhagavad Gita, they very quickly come to this understanding. So, we see that it does. It is a fact, and this principle, therefore, of understanding that the material world, the material energy, is one of the Lord's energies, and that we are a spirit soul in the material world, and the material energy is not something we can claim proprietorship over, because it is one of the energies of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, a devotee becomes detached from trying to enjoy the property of the Supreme Lord. When one takes that position of not claiming proprietorship over the energy or the property of the Supreme Lord, then one becomes, even though one's situated in the material body, that person is described here as they become detached from the mode's material nature. And the example given here is that when the sun is reflected on water, the movement of the water or the coolness or unsteadiness of the water cannot affect the sun. So it just very clearly gives a good example. So it appears that we're here, we're in the material world, we're in a material body. So we would think, oh, then we're affected and we're changing and so many different things are happening. Actually, our position remains changeless when we're not affected by the modes of material nature, just as the position of the sun is not affected because it is reflected on the water. So the soul, even though within the material body, also remains detached from the material body, detached from the whole material world, even though it appears to be there within the material world. Like that. So, now, but there are two very important principles that a devotee, that is there within a devotee's consciousness, that actually manifest when the devotee is in that transcendental position. Of course, liberation from the modes of material nature is by degrees. So by degrees of realization, faith and conviction, understanding in these principles, the liberation is there. One, a devotee understands that he is or she is the eternal servant of the personality of Godhead, a little atomic particle, a spiritual, little spiritual particle of the Lord's spiritual energy. That is our eternal position. We're a little part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a little part of his energy, spiritual energy. And therefore, all the energies of the Personality of Godhead are engaged in his transcendental service. He's utilizing his energies for his various purposes. And therefore, because we're a little part of the Supreme Whole of the Personality of Godhead, and that is our eternal position, that never changes, and if we're fixed in that consciousness, we understand we have no other business in this world except to act on behalf of the Supreme Lord for his pleasure. Like that. So that's called avikara. Now, if we associate with the material energy, then that eternal changeless position is lost. Then we become a man, we become a woman, we become an Indian, we become an Australian, we become a dog, we become an elephant, we become a demigod, and we just change one life after another. Just like when I'm doing the ceremonies for some of the little children, and I like to say to the parents, you know, that when I'm explaining about the spirit soul, how this spirit soul has come into your family, and if you go back in time, you know, about a year or so, that little child had a whole different family. And at the end of this life, the little child will go into a whole different other family. And then everything will be forgotten. Just like the previous family, all the friends, the relatives, the enemies, all forgotten. So, you know, we now think of, you know, we try and think back. So in our previous life, we had a whole different family. And, you know, is there anyone here who cares at all about anyone from their previous life? We don't care. And is there anyone from our previous life cares about us? No. And then, next life, another change. Next life, another change. See? So that eternal position. But a devotee, even if they take different births, they remain within the family of Krishna. Same family, same friends, and same guru. And, you know, so their position is changeless. So that is one thing which is very important, that within the consciousness of one who actually then does detach themselves from the material energy, we don't actually identify with our material family. Even Queen Kunti, who was associated with so many devotees, prayed to Krishna, please cut off my attachment to these family members. And who were her family members? The Pandavas and so many personalities. But she was saying, if it makes me forget you, if I lose my sense of Krishna consciousness, cut it off. So, and of course, if we identify as the eternal, as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we understand, well, that's my relationship. That's the reality. That's my real relationships. Therefore, as soon as we understand who we are, we can understand our duty. Many people in this world are trying to find their calling. You know, they're trying to find themselves. People do all sorts of things. They go walking in the deserts, you know, for months, thinking, I'll find myself in there. Because they know that they've lost themselves. They've gone a bit crazy. They're drinking, taking intoxication, destroying relationships, destroying their body, destroying their mind. They think, oh, this is not me, you know. Let me go into the desert. And they go into the desert and they undergo severe austerities, or they travel all around the world. Sometimes they travel up to the moon. And they do this or they do that, trying to find themselves. Because until you find yourself, you don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what your duty is. You don't know what your activity should be. What am I doing? I'm wasting my time. I don't know who I am, what I should be doing. No one can understand what they should do until they understand who they are. What is their identity? And therefore, you know, Sanatana Goswami, although he was considered to be a very, very elevated scholar, pundit, one of the respected by everyone as being the most intelligent personality, scholarly, learned. But when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, people are saying that I am some pundit or scholar, but I don't even know who I am. So you see all the professors and, you know, the people with all their accreditations from, they're, you know, been to university and they've done this and they've done that, and they're very proud, I am such a big scholar. You ask them this one question: who are you? I don't know. I think I'm Professor Katovsky. Nope. You're a fool. If you think you're Professor Katovsky, you're a fool. And all your education means nothing. And you waste this whole lifetime. There's a story of the boatman. So you drown in the ocean of material energy, you take birth after birth after birth. So that is the first principle, because when one understands who one is, then we understand. My duty is not for all these changeable identities I take. Just like an actor. You know, an actor changes their costume, they change their role, and they, you know, do this. And then when they come off stage, they understand, but here is my real identity, like that. So we go through many millions of bodies, but they're all different costume changes, different roles we play. Who are we? We are eternal servant Krishna. Then we understand, so when an actor gets off the stage, if they forget who they were before they put the costume on, they might walk around, you know, Bourke Street thinking, I am Napoleon. Not tonight, Josephine, you know, whatever. Or, you know, I am this one or that one. But, you know, they take the costume off, they understand, no, I go about my usual business. So that is one thing. Otherwise, one cannot claim to be liberated from the modes of material nature. One is acting under the material position. And the second thing is this akartritvat. Akartritvat. Now, have a look here. By freedom from proprietorship. So that's the how it is in the word for word. Freedom from proprietorship. And this is interesting because it says here, when one becomes detached from material attraction and engages fully in devotional service, that is changelessness, akartritvat means not doing anything for sense gratification. When one does something at his own risk, there is a sense of proprietorship and therefore a reaction. But when one does everything for Krishna, there is no proprietorship over the activities. I like that term, proprietorship over the activities. By changelessness and by not claiming the proprietorship of activities, One can immediately situate himself in the transcendental position in which one is not touched by the modes of material nature, just as the reflection of the sun is unaffected by the water. So this, not having proprietorship over activities is a very interesting concept. In the Bhagavad Gita, although we are doing things, Krishna is also helping us to do things. So we're not the only one doing the activity. Although Krishna is the proprietor, he's the actual one doing everything. Just like Krishna said to Arjuna, that if you don't kill these people, Arjuna, it doesn't matter, it's not going to stop the outcome because I've already killed them. Okay? So Krishna's already done it. He's actually done the activity. Prabhupada says, Krishna never asked Arjuna that, although I'm God and I'm actually doing everything, therefore Arjuna, you sit down here on the chariot and smoke ganja and I'll go kill everyone. Okay? Krishna, so some people think like that, well, God is doing everything, therefore I'll sit and smoke ganja and Krishna will cover it. I don't know. Although Krishna is doing everything, and the devotee understands that, still Krishna wants us to do everything according to our full capacity, because when we do something, in actuality, it is not that so much that Arjuna fought the battle, but it is that Arjuna declared his love and friendship to Krishna. That is what he's doing. That's the actual thing that the Supreme Lord wants us to do. You love me. You love me actively, like that. Other things, is not so important. So many wars, so many things. Krishna wanted Arjuna to demonstrate his love and friendship to the personality of Godhead. The Battle of Kurukshetra was really Krishna's business, and Arjuna took Krishna's business that if it's important to you, Krishna, it's important to me because I'm your friend. Like that. Prabhupada did. Prabhupada accepted Krishna as his friend. And the only thing he did in this world from the time he was born was think about Krishna and took every opportunity to take care of Krishna's business. And Krishna's business is to, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, is to teach people the principles of the Gita to deliver them from the clutches of the material energy. And that is Krishna's business. And Krishna says, one who does this, they're very, very dear to me. In other words, they're demonstrating their friendship to Krishna in the topmost way. So, a devotee understands that Krishna is doing everything. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Trinadapi Sinichinatharo Vivasi Hishna Manina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahari, that a devotee is always humble. As soon as we become proud of what we have done or achieved, then we're forgetting that actually Krishna is doing everything, aren't we? Krishna manifests in different ways. Just like if we think about it, here we are, let's take me as an example. Here I am sitting, speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, let's dismantle my pride. What would I be doing now? How would I be speaking to Srimad Bhagavatam? What knowledge would I have of Srimad Bhagavatam? What audience would I have if Srila Prabhupada hadn't come from the West, the age of almost 70, penniless practically, and worked tirelessly to establish an international society of Krishna consciousness all over the world. What would any of us be doing? We'd have nothing to be proud of as devotees, wouldn't we? So that is Krishna acting. That is Krishna doing everything. Krishna's done everything. What would we have done, you know, without Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur? And Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur? Because at the time, even after, you know, the Krishna consciousness movement was established and the Goswamis had written all the books which we're now studying, again everything became lost. In the times of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, they actually kick-started it again. Otherwise it was finished practically. In their time, the Krishna consciousness movement, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, was considered some, you know, for people who really couldn't take to spiritual life, and it was some philosophy associated with sex life, you know, for, you know, sahajas. And that's what would be, you know, if it wasn't for Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, their strictness and writing the books and preaching, if there was a Krishna consciousness movement in the West, it would be a movement of sahajas. I think it took Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur about 7 years or something to find a copy, a proper copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, so much lost was the culture. You know, otherwise there were copies of Chaitanya Charitamrita written by sahajas, commented on by sahajas. The philosophy was just nonsense. I think it's about 7 years to find. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, you know, what would we be reading if Srila Prabhupada hadn't translated, you know, the Bhagavatam into English and implanted the culture in a way that we could understand, you know, in China and Australia. You know, for an Australian to understand anything about ancient Indian cultures, they're just like worlds apart. First time I went to India, even as a devotee, I thought I went to another planet. I'm not sure that I didn't. But, you know, but understanding the culture, you know, they're worlds away. In Australia, we make a culture about not having a culture. You know, if we become proud of, you know, oh, I'm doing so many things as a devotee, then, of course, this principle, what I love about the Srimad Bhagavatam and about Srila Prabhupada is that, you know, we're into the third canto. We've studied Bhagavad Gita, Ishapanishad, Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, all the different cantos. Now we're in the third canto. And you would think that this topic of the false ego is done and dusted long ago. It was never done and dusted. And this is the pillar of being a devotee properly and being unaffected by the modes of material nature. In other words, one can become a big, big devotee and yet these levels of consciousness, which are the foundation, may be on shaky ground. You know, and how do you know that? If a devotee is feeling proud that, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I've done so much, you know, like that, then you have to say, well, isn't that proprietorship over your activities? Is it? It's proprietorship. So, and therefore we see, you know, it's not unusual that one can be a big devotee, but because that sense of proprietorship over one's activities, not understanding Krishna doing everything, you know, even sometimes big devotees can, you know, have significant obstacles on the path of devotional service. So in order to be unaffected by the obstacles the material energy can, you know, throw on the path of devotional service, one needs actually these two things. They're very simple to understand, but to practice them, Prabhupada says the process is simple, but the application is difficult. It's very simple for everyone to understand, but to apply it, shall I apply it? That's where the difficulty comes. But actually, applying that principle is very, very wonderful, because one may think that, I'm giving credit to Prabhupada, I'm giving credit to Krishna, I'm giving credit to all the acharyas, I'm giving credit to, you know, my all the devotees who have come before me, who have worked so hard. Devotees, I know some of my friends who died, you know, from Melbourne, died spreading Krishna consciousness, died, you know, to try and support this temple, make sure it's here today. And, we give them credit. You know, thank you. You gave your life. And that happens all over the world. one may think, yeah, I'm giving credit to everyone. What is the credit for me? A devotee is not interested, but Krishna is. And this is the reciprocal relationship with Krishna and his devotees. The devotees do nothing. You see, Prabhupada, he never acted for his own credit. He never took proprietorship over his activities. You know, he always, if there was anything that someone glorified, oh, this is the mercy of my spiritual master. You know, this is, you know, he is sending disciples. Not, I'm a big preacher, so many people are coming. My spiritual master is sending disciples. And that. Krishna is doing everything. And Krishna was. You know, when Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta and he had the heart attack, practically that should have been finished. But he had he was thinking, you know, again, and, you know, all the rough seas or anything, and I just won't even make it to that other shore. And then he had this dream, and Krishna was there in a boat with all the different avatars, and they're all rowing and saying to Prabhupada, come on, come along, you know, be all right. See? Like that. So, and so therefore, but we see that Prabhupada only acted for Krishna, but Krishna wanted to glorify Prabhupada. Krishna wanted to glorify Arjuna. You know, generally, most people in this world, if they hear the story of the Mahabharata, they usually think, Arjuna, you great warrior, like that. But, you know, actually Krishna did everything. Krishna did, you know, whatever. Krishna was responsible for all of Arjuna's successes. Just like a little child. Sometimes you pick a little child up, and the child says, I want to touch the ceiling. And you hold them up, and they touch the ceiling. And the child's thinking, I touch the ceiling. Actually, the parent is touching the ceiling through the child. So, but the parent's saying, oh, you know, well done. Well done, you've touched the ceiling. The child's thinking, you know, one of my accomplishments for the day. And, something very difficult. You know, my little sister didn't touch the ceiling. Oh, I did. So, you know, a devotee is like that. So, the parent, they like to glorify the children, you know, give them confidence and show their love. And it's, if you want to experience the love of Krishna, that's what you do. You keep giving all the credit to Krishna and his devotees. And then Krishna, he wants to reciprocate love, and he wants to give credit to his devotee, but his devotee doesn't want to take any credit. But that's how you experience the love of Krishna. Just like, I think it was Rupa Goswami, he wanted to make a meal. You know, he thought, my elder brother Sanatan, such a nice devotee. He's doing so much. If I could make him, you know, he's performing so many steps. If I could make him some nice prasadam, that'd be so wonderful. So then, you know, As he was thinking that, the little girl came out of the forest. Oh, Babaji, you know, we've had some ceremony, festival. We had so much foodstuffs left over. We want to give to the Babaji's. So, you know, Rupert took those, cooked some not, you know, nice feast for his brother, invited Sanatan. He gets there and he's thinking, we live in the forest, we have no money. Where did you get all this to make this beautiful feast? And then Rupert described this beautiful girl who came. And Sanatan was thinking, he heard the description, he was thinking, that was Radharani. But then he became angry at Rupa. What have you done to me? We are trying to give everything to Radha Krishna, trying to serve them. And now they are, you know, you have forced me, I'm accepting their service. He didn't want it. But just see the glory of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, that Radharani herself comes out of the forest and gives them the food. What glorious devotee has that opportunity. Actually, it reminds me of, just on that note, a nice dream that I had when I was a brahmachari. I think I've told this before, but it's similar to this story, that I wanted a friend of mine. I'd known this person for about, you know, 5 or so years, and we did everything every day practically together. So we were very close friends. And I became a devotee, and I wanted him to, you know, see the Bhagavad Gita and see the Srimad Bhagavatam and see the deer. I thought, if he sees this, he's going to love it. He's going to, you know. And so in my dream, I travelled to where he was, and, you know, I took the trains and the buses, you know, the whole thing, as you actually would. And I got there and I ran up and I was saying to him, you know, you've got to come because we've got to get there before the deities, you know, close like that, but you've got to come now, please, you know. And I begged him to come. And he reluctantly come, and then we go on the bus and the tram. I was running up this street here, and I was thinking, oh, they're going to close. He's not going to be able to see the deities like that. And we come into the temple, and just as I come in, the door's shut. My heart was broken. I was thinking, oh, my God, you know. And then as I was looking at the doors, what happened was all this incense come billowing out from over the top, and the curtains opened and the doors opened up, and actually Radharani here had got off the altar. She'd opened the doors from the inside. She did a little pirouette and got back on the altar, and I said to my friend, there's Radha Krishna. Like that. I was so happy. But I never forget that, because I've always, you know, tried to follow that mood, that understanding that, you know, if you preach Krishna consciousness, you know, Radharani will, you know, bless you. She'll assist you. She'll look after you. And, you know, another interesting Sankirtan story. One time, just showing, you know, how Krishna and Radharani are doing everything. One time I was on Sankirtan. It was here in Melbourne, and I was going out. It was a Christmas marathon, because in those days we used to go to the hotels and we used to go to the brothels. We used to go anywhere that was open. We'd just, you know, get Lakshmi and bring it back. Anything that was open, night or day, you know, we slept there a couple of hours. And it was pretty rough. But I was going out with Jai Sheila. You may know him, Prabhupada's disciple. And we were very competitive. So, and we were trying to win the marathon, because that's what a devotee does. They're doing it as if I'm really doing everything, but they're also understanding Krishna's doing everything, but they give their, Krishna's doing everything, I'll just do everything half-hearted. Krishna's doing everything, but because I love him, I'm going to work anyway, just like in Vaikuntha. You know, the Lakshmis, they actually like to dust, and, you know, not that there's any dust, but they, you know, they like to clean and personally chant with Krishna, although they don't have to, but they give their full energy to it. So anyway, we were neck and neck, very competitive. I'm going to win, I'm going to win. It was just like that, the mood of the cowherd voice. I'm going to be the first to touch Krishna. No, I'm going to be the first, like that. So it's competitive, but it's loving. So what happened was, I got sick. I got really sick. I got so sick that, you know, I couldn't talk, nothing, no voice, you know, and I was slumped over, practically unconscious, and Jai Sheila's going, you should take the day off, and I'm thinking, you rascal, yeah, right, I'm going to take the day off, and you're going to beat me. It's not going to happen, not on my watch. And I struggled every day, even while I was sick. And on the last day, right, what had happened is that we'd saved this last place. There were like thousands of workers in this big factory, and they all got their Christmas money on that day, and we'd worked out that we were going to go in there. We were selling candles, and we were going to clean up. And I wasn't going to miss it for the world. But I was as sick as I'd ever been, and I practically couldn't walk, and I couldn't speak like that. So I was like this. And he went in. I thought, that's not going to happen. You're not going to do this. Not on the last day. You're not going to beat me. And I said, I prayed to Krishna. Krishna, I can't do anything. It's up to you. I know you're the doer. So I got out of the car, picked up a box of candles, and I walked in, and I put them on the table. They're all sitting at their tables, like having a lunch, you know, sort of breakup thing. I hadn't said anything. And the guy says to me, oh, are they those candles, are they? And I said, they're about $20. I'll take the red one. I never said a word. It was one of the biggest days. I never said a word. I just kept running back and forth. People just kept buying them, and I won. I won the money. That's the main thing. No, look. As I say, we've got to dismantle the pride. Down, down, down. But Krishna did everything. You know, but what I'm saying is that's what Krishna does. You know, if you're acting for Krishna's, he actually is the doer. And sometimes you get this strong loving reciprocation because he shows you, yes, I'm actually here and I'm doing things. And I walked out of there and I thought, I never said a word. I didn't do anything. I didn't try to sell anything. All I did was walk in and Krishna sold a lot. And that. So, you know, this, so it's very, it's not generally when we think in terms of, oh, they're getting the credit, they're getting, I'm not getting, we think, oh, I'm missing out, you know, who am I, like, no one ever thinks about me. But if Krishna is thinking of you, because you're actually Krishna conscious, you don't need anything else. That's it. So, I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Any questions? No? Sorry. Oh, you're gone.
Could you mention how some of
your friends gave their life in the service of Krishna? Well, there was one devotee here, Puri, I think Aniruddha Prabhu has mentioned him. He was we live like brahmacharis, although sometimes devotees in that era came married, so he was actually married. But his wife eventually married Shivananda, who wrote the book, Japa handbook, with all the quotes, Shivananda. Yeah, so his wife eventually married him, who was a Prabhupada disciple, Shivananda. But we lived like brahmacharis, and we just went out in Sankirtan, so practically, you know, seeing his wife was probably, you know, hello in the morning and I'm back in the evening, and it wasn't much more than that. He was in Tasmania. We used to do Sankirtan every day. We used to get up very, very early and take rest every night and work really hard. And unfortunately, that took its toll because he was so exhausted that apparently he may have fallen asleep at the wheel of the car while on Sankirtan, and you know, a truck came and, you know, like that. So just through exhaustion, just like that, you know. So, and you know, there are different devotees who have, you know, in different parts of the world in Australia who, you know, just through just giving everything for Krishna, you know, somehow it's even costing their life in different ways.
You mentioned that you try to figure out who we are. I would say from a spiritual point of view,
Yeah. Well, again, Krishna has... Prabhupada used to say that... well, in a letter, I think it was, that we have two destinies. According to our material karma, there's one destiny. But if we become a devotee, there's a Krishna destiny, Prabhupada would say. So Krishna has a plan for you. It's like Krishna had a plan for Arjuna. So again, it depends upon just doing our service as a devotee and understanding, yes, Krishna is the doer, I am the instrument. If I just purify myself and become a good instrument, gradually then Krishna will get me to do the thing that he wants me to do, because then I'll be purified and qualified. So, you know, in the early days of ISKCON, that was a very common theme amongst devotees. That there was no concept of what we were going to do in the future. It was just the service we had to do today, and we were going to do that for as long as we possibly could and just try and become qualified as a nice devotee. Other things manifested literally by Krishna's grace. So, you know, most of the things that I'm doing today, you know, although basically I'm doing them simply because I tried to be a devotee, not because I tried to do those activities. Okay. So, don't ever feel, you know, this is where we put our faith in Krishna, that don't ever feel, if Krishna's doing everything and we're the instrument, then, you know, when Krishna feels that we're now qualified as the instrument, he will utilize us in a particular way, both materially and spiritually, in one sense. And our first priority is really to become fixed in that consciousness. I am Krishna's devotee, but let me really become, you know, fixed up in that, 100%. So as that situation arises, then Krishna will utilize a devotee in different ways. And as we heard with the story of Srimati Radharani, you know, she provides everything. Like that. So we take, you know, we take a commitment to Krishna, and then Radharani, she just follows and blesses us in so many different ways. Just like when you do a marriage ceremony and then you draw the seven circles on the floor, you know, we say to the couple, you keep your vows to each other and the goddess of fortune will follow behind you, showering you with everything, you know, you need in this world. That those vows, apart from all their apart from all their qualifications in education and work and occupation, actually it's the vows that they make, especially if they make them, you know, in a temple or, you know, proper religious ceremony, it's the vows that actually will provide their path in life. Or if they don't keep those vows, it will cause destruction. So therefore, it's actually said by Chanakya Pandit that in the home where the husband and wife don't argue, that the goddess of fortune, she comes there and she says, I will stay here. And as soon as the husband and, you know, wife argue, and especially if they don't keep their vows to each other, goddess of fortune leaves. Everything finished. Job finished, money finished, you know, everything they've worked for, everything cut in half of the chainsaw. And then divide it up amongst the lawyers and the relatives and so many others. So, you know, it's all been a useless waste of time. So one may have been better off to be well situated in their vows as husband and wife, look after each other, even if it means perhaps some career choices may not be possible. You know, like in Hollywood, basically their career choices destroy their marriage and everything ruined. They're better off to maintain those vows. And same with us, we're better off to maintain that understanding. I'm your devotee, Krishna. I'm not taking proprietorship over my activities. The more we're fixed up in that, our path, you know, is revealed. That's the main thing. Yeah, it's a good question. That, you know, his question is basically, you know, when devotees, they come to the temple, and you know, it's a lot easier and sort of black and white that we, you know, see ourselves as a servant of Krishna. We do so many things to please Krishna. When it comes to the interaction of devotees, it becomes more complicated, and sometimes there are some, you know, transgressions of etiquette and different things that happen. And the reason is because it's a higher level of activity. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says to Arjuna that, you know, one on the transcendental platform, they see stone or gold and things as equal. So, you know, for some things, it's a little easier. Look at the gold, okay, that's, you know, it's the same as, you know, earth, it's just another form of earth, it's part of the material energy. Either way, I'm not the enjoyer or the proprietor of either, you know, like that. Whereas for some people, they see earth, oh, that's okay, I don't care. They see gold, oh, I'm the proprietor, you know, they can't help it. But if one remains neutral, that's advanced. But to do that with people, friends, enemies, like that, he says, one is more advanced if they can do that. See, it's a higher level. And to do it with devotees, you know, that is, it takes a lot of intelligence. It's a higher level. It's the highest level. But it's the same principle. See, and this is where, you know, this is the beauty of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're thinking, oh, relationships can become so complicated. No. It's the same principle. In the same way that we don't accept proprietorship over our activities for anything, we don't in our interactions with devotees. But because it's more complex, we actually do. And therefore, if a devotee becomes proud, you know, I've done so much, I'm so important, my service is more important than you, my facility is more important than you, or not like that. That, you can guarantee there's going to be some transgression of etiquette when one becomes proud. What is that, pride? They're going to trample someone's feelings. They're going to trample someone's facility that they're using in devotional service. Oh, I said it's a bit more important. Yeah, I'm grabbing that facility and taking it for myself. You know, we used to have that as brahmacharis. It still goes on today, but with bigger things. That, you know, we'd have two devotees each, and you'd put it in the wash, and sometimes one devotee hadn't washed their other devotees, so they sort of grab yours. Oh, I'm wearing this because, you know, I need it for Krishna service because I've got all this important service to do. And, you know, Prabhu, that's the devotee that I'm using Krishna service. Yeah, you know, that's, you know, what are you doing? You know, how much did you collect last week compared to me? You know, I'm a bigger collector than you. So, but the same thing still goes on. And, you know, it's the same principle, this pride. Pride means, you know, I've accepted proprietorship over my activities. And when we're, so if we maintain that, Krishna's doing everything, he still wants me to act as an instrument, and we apply that to our relationships, we get the same result as, you know, anything. So, therefore, such an important verse. And we see even, you know, sannyasis, GBCs, you know, all sorts of big, even gurus, have succumbed again to this. You know, there's some pride, there's been some, you know, great difficulty in the relationships created, which is sort of then, you know, can lead to, you know, complete fall down sometimes. So it's the same principle. It's a very simple principle. And, you know, sometimes we neglect the basics of Krishna consciousness, thinking I'm going to get into some of the deeper philosophy. But if we don't get the foundation right, everything we add to it will crumble on top of the foundation. When a devotee is affected by the modes of material nature, generally it means they're a Kanishtha Adhikari. But there are devotees who are not affected by the modes of material nature. So Prabhupada says that, you know, the three types of devotees, Kanishtha Adhikaris, they're affected still by the happiness and distress afflicted by the modes of material nature, the good and the bad. Majjhima Adhikaris are not. They're you know, preachers, and they're by and large not affected. The effect is there, but by and large not. Uttama Adhikari, not only are they transcendental, 100% to the modes of material nature, but they're also relishing, you know, transcendental ecstasy and love in you know, to a very intense degree. And Prabhupada would say that those devotees, Kanishthas, generally will quarrel with each other. Devotees affected by the modes of material nature will quarrel. And this is exactly what we said here. When a devotee is affected by the material nature, it means that that devotee is taking proprietorship over their activities. That's what it means. Either in tama, rajas, or sattva. They're taking proprietorship over the activities. It is the same point. We have to be careful not to complicate it by something more. The simple point is that if we take proprietorship of our activities to any degree, we are affected by material energy. And that is one of the things which is a symptom that we're not properly situated in devotional service. We may be situated in devotional service, but the liberation is of a lower degree.
So Uttama Adhikari, he's already in the Nirguna, even though he's here in the material world. And that means he sees everybody as the same. Like he looks, you know what I mean? He doesn't see people all,
higher and lower, that's right. He sees everyone engaged in the service of Krishna except oneself.
And he sees all the good qualities and
Uttama Adhikari.
And that's also when the three modes of material nature is broken, which consists of the 24 qualities in
Parajiva,
isn't it?
Well, as we say, Prabhupada says liberation is in degree. So even the Kanishtha Adhikari, Prabhupada says, they're becoming imperceptibly liberated. So as long as they remain a Kanishtha Adhikari, the modes of material nature are affecting them and the way they do their service. But they're still, they are becoming liberated at every step. The Majjhima Adhikaris, by and large, they're fixed up in devotional service. And although the modes of material nature may affect them, may influence them, they don't act upon it. So what happens when the modes of material nature affect, influence a Kanishtha Adhikari, they will act upon that. A Majjhima Adhikari will just keep doing their service to Krishna. Even though the modes of material nature may be affecting their consciousness or their heart, they just, I'm not listening to the mind, and they just do their service to Krishna despite that. But an Uttama Adhikari, modes of material nature not even, you know, there. So, but all are liberated to different degrees, and all are becoming liberated at every step of devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai.